On the agenda is someone I'm sure all of you have read and heard about. And he's been written up in People magazine, in the Sporting News, and also in a number of newspapers around the country. He's has been in the last year a Major League Baseball player and is very qualified to speak on the subject he's speaking on today, because in addition to being a Major League Baseball player, he's also a member of the Worldwide Church of God. This individual earned a baseball scholarship to Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois, as a high school student. He had the privilege his freshman year of playing in the College World Series, where his team finished second in the nation behind University of Southern California. As a sophomore, he was selected to the College Baseball All-America team as a first baseman. And then about a month later in that year, in June of 1972, he was drafted number one by the Milwaukee Brewers Baseball Club and signed for a sizable bonus with them. And during his first couple of years, he won the Triple Crown Award as a professional playing for the AA team. And if any of you are familiar with baseball, winning the Triple Crown Award is winning the batting title, winning the home run crown, and also the runs batted in crown, which doing all three of them is an extremely difficult task. But anyway, he won the Triple Crown Award playing with the AA team in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and that helped him get into the major leagues in 1976. He played for the first 2.5 months of last season in the major leagues with the Milwaukee Brewers. His batting average was about 280, and then he was sent down because of various situations, which he'll probably be telling you about, and now has received another contract to sign back up with baseball again, and will be reporting back to the baseball camps this spring. It's my pleasure to introduce to you as our next speaker, Mr. Dan Thomas.
Thank you, Mike. Students, young people, I must say it is indeed a pleasure and honor to be here. I'm not much of a speaker, so all I do is play ball in front of people. I don't know how to talk to people, so you guys have to bear with me. I do have something I want to say, though, and I'm going to say it. I'd like to start out by asking a question to many of you, because 10 years ago I was roughly sitting in some of the same seats that you are, not in this particular building, but wanting to know about the truth and where I was going. But I'd like to ask, my first question is, how many of you students, young people here in the audience, how many of you feel that you are limited to the things that you can achieve because of your association with the Worldwide Church of God? Can I see a raise of hands? Do any of you feel like you are limited because you're in the church? I see a lot of hands. I'd like to find out why. Can I see the hands again, please? Let's see. There's a hand right here. Would you stand up, please, and state your name? Wait a minute before you ask a question. Let me get a mic to you. My question is, why do you feel like you're limited, right? First, tell me your name. And
Brent Freeman.
Brent?
Because most games are on Friday nights and everything, and you can't participate in them.
Most games are on Friday night. Well, that's okay. Thank you. Anyone else? There's a man in the white shirt there.
My name's Arnie Guthrie.
Arnie.
And they have all the state meets on Saturday. And can't go.
Saturday daytime? Is that track meets? Or
track meets, yes.
Track meets. How about a gal? How about a young girl? Let's hear a... There's one in the back here with a yellow sweater on here. Why do you feel like you're limited? Would you state your name? Stand up, please, so everyone can see you.
My name's Lynn Mailer.
Lynn.
And career-wise, I think it's limited because, I'd like to be a stewardess, and you can't keep the Sabbath. Usually you're traveling.
Yeah.
That way.
Traveling all the time, yeah. Going from one city to another. Uh-huh. That's understandable. Well, let me, that'll do for right now. I can understand how I used to feel the same way. And that's why I had to do some of the things that I did. And I'm here to tell you that because you're in the church, because you're in the worldwide church of God, the true church of God, there are absolutely no limits. I mean, you are not limited in any way, in any manner, because of the things that you want to do or to become. And I'm going to show you why and how. You know, 15% of all college graduates, I mean, I went to college, you guys are going to go to college, a lot of you will, but out of all the graduates, only 15% of these graduates ever get into a field that they started out to get into. I mean, these people who sat down at some time in their life, they said, well, I'm going to be a doctor. They went to college. They went to 4 to 6 to 8 years of college. When they got out, they became, they started pumping gas down at the stop-and-go station there. You know, they did. Something went wrong. I mean, if only 15% can achieve what they want, something's wrong. That means 85% of the people that graduate from college are going to do things that they really don't want to do. Well, I hope none of you are going to be the 85%. I don't want to be the 85%. I want to be in that 15% that does what I want to do and what I'm best qualified to do. And for my own personal life, I'm a baseball player. Most of my life I've played ball, and it was my one big ambition in life. Well, my purpose today is to show you that by following the 7 laws of success that are in this book, the 7 laws of success, I'm sure a lot of you have seen it. I know this book helped me tremendously in becoming a Major League Baseball player just from reading it and applying the laws that are in it. I do suggest that a lot of you read it because the laws do work. Well, law number one is there are 7 laws of success, right? Law number one is fix the right goal. That's the first law of success. Well, before you can achieve, before you can become something, you have got to have direction. You have got to have something that you want. What is it that you want? I hear a lot of people say, well, I can't become a track star. I can't become a baseball player. I can't become a professional actor because of the Sabbath and because of I'm in the church and we're not supposed to do these things. Well, garbage. You can do these things. These are limits that the world would want you to put upon yourself. But the first law of success is to pick a goal. Pick a right goal. You've got to have direction in your life. You have got to be going somewhere. You've got to sit down sometime in your life and make up your mind what it is that you're after. You know, in Matthew 6:33, God tells to us our number one goal. All of us here should be, seek ye first the kingdom of God. That's our goal. I mean, that should be our number one goal. Our number one priority is the kingdom of God. And all righteousness and his righteousness and all these things shall be added unto you. That's what it says in Matthew 6:33. Okay, so God tells us our number one goal should be to become sons of God, eventual sons of God. My question is, what about now? We're not in the kingdom of God. We're not in utopia. We're not in God's government now, today. That's my question. Am I supposed to go out here and work in some factory and work for $2 an hour, and it's really what I hate to do? Am I supposed to do that to get into the kingdom of God? Well, I don't think so. My own personal belief is, all I have to do is make up my mind. If I apply what God tells me to seek his kingdom and do the things that he wants me to do, then all of these other things are going to be added to me. All I have got to do is make up my mind which direction I want to go into. So law number one is fix the right goal. My number one goal was baseball. I always wanted to be a baseball player. Ever since I was in the 3rd grade and the teacher came in and said, well, Dan, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I'm going to be a professional baseball player, you know. And everybody laughs. This kid's really strange, you know. Well, Those people laughed at me in the third grade. In the fourth grade, they laughed at me. In the fifth grade, they laughed at me. In the sixth grade, they laughed at me all along the way, right? Well, they're not laughing anymore. They're out there working in a factory, man, and they're not happy. And I'm playing ball, see? I got what I wanted, and the reason I got it, because I put that a goal. Number one law of success. When I was 12, 13 years old, well, later than that, 16, I believe, I read this book, see? And in this book, it says the number one law of success is to fix the right goal. Well, I got down and I thought, well, let's see. What do I want to do? I'm going to be a baseball player. That's what I'm, you know, I've already made up my mind in the third grade. I've said I wanted to be a ball player since I was in the third grade, so I'm going to be a ball player. Baseball was my goal, is what I wanted to become. Well, now law number two, education or preparation towards your goal. Well, my goal was baseball. So if you want to be a baseball player, how are you going to educate yourself or prepare yourself to become a ball player? See, I already picked up, okay, here's what I want to do. Now, how am I going to do it? Well, I have to apply law number two, success law number two, see, which is education. I have to educate myself. I have got to prepare myself to become a Major League Baseball player. Well, the education or preparation for me was simply, I have got to play ball. I'm not going to get educated. I'm not going to learn how to be a professional ball player unless I play the game. I have got to play and play and play and develop and get better. My skills have got to increase. I'm not good now. I'm not capable of going out age 16, 17 and playing in the major leagues. I've got to make myself get better. So I went ahead to educate myself. How I got my education? I played Little League. I started off in Little League baseball. That's where I started. I played Babe Ruth baseball. I played Pony League baseball. I played junior high school baseball. I played high school baseball. I played American Legion baseball. I played Montclair baseball or semi-professional baseball, where I learned a tremendous amount. I got a scholarship to college where I played collegiate baseball. And it was in my first month of college, I think, that I learned more baseball in 1 month of college because of the school I went to and the coach that I had than I had learned in my entire life. I learned in 1 month more baseball. I couldn't believe it. Simple things like, Dan, how to hold a ball. I didn't know there was a proper way to hold a ball. To me, to play baseball, you just pick it up and throw it, you know. There's no proper way to hold it, but there are proper ways to hold a ball. Well, I didn't know these things. Then I played collegiate summer league ball. And then came June 6, 1972, which is what all of this education, which is what Little League on up into collegiate summer league, was aimed at, was geared at, professional baseball. That's how I got my education. And it works, law number two. You have got to prepare you. No matter what you choose for your goal, when you make up your mind, and each and every one of you are going to have to make up your own minds, your young people. You have minds of your own. You can't be told what to do. Nobody can come over here and say, you're going to be a truck driver, or you're going to do this for a living. You can make up your own mind. You have that right, and it is one of the laws of success. Make up your mind what you want to do. After you've made up your mind, educate yourself. Get all the education in that field that you can. Law number three is good health. You know, for most of us in this room, good health should be the simplest law of success to follow. Simply because in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14, those things were drilled into my head when I was 16, 17 years old. The health laws. What foods to eat, what foods not to eat. See, we're very lucky because God, in the world, they don't know the health laws. See, the guys that I play, Sal Bando and Hank Aaron and those guys, they don't know the health laws. These guys are all superstars. But I know the health laws because I was brought up with them. You know? Those things when I was 16 were drilled into my head. Good health. So really, law number three should be easy for us. Good health physically and mentally, especially mental good health. And how do you get mental good health? Protect your minds. Don't let your minds be twisted, distorted, torn and ripped apart. Protect them. Protect your minds. Protect your bodies. Stay in good health, physical and mental. I'd like to tell you a story here about how when I was a kid growing up and how this law applied to me. My dad was a fanatic about me and my brothers. I have four brothers, in case a lot of you don't know. And when we were growing up, we were really rough and rugged, like most young people. And we just loved to play football without pads, you know. The old tackle football, man, that was, you know, sure, we played football with pads too, but sometimes, like on the weekends or something, there weren't no pads or nothing. So we just go out here in a field, and we'd get up a game, see. And here we are out here tackling people and diving on people. And sure enough, my dad would look out the window, and he'd see us out in the ballpark, me and my brother, usually Tommy, right under me. And man, he would come running. Uh-oh. You know, somebody would say, Dan, the old man's coming. And I'd look up, and boy, instant fear. Uh-oh. He told me not to play ball, tackle football without pads. Boy, my dad is so stupid, you know, I thought. It ain't no fun to play if you can't play with pads. You know, we're not going to get hurt. Well, my dad was a wise man. He knew I could get hurt. There was a possibility of me breaking my neck, not only my neck, but back and other bones playing tackle football without pads. So he drove that into me. If you're going to play football, put the pads on. Because that's what they're made for. Don't go out here and do it without them because you'll get hurt. And he was right. You will get hurt if you don't take care of yourself. But I got my end busted. It was playing ball for not wearing the proper equipment, and it was horse playing that got me in more trouble with my dad. I mean, me and my brothers, we got it over and over and over for those two things. Playing without the proper equipment or on the right field and horse playing. And that was a no-no. You don't horse play or play with no pads. Law number three is good health. Keep yourselves healthy. Okay. A fourth law of success is drive. Drive simply means when you make up your mind what it is you want, go get it. Don't stop. Have that motivation, that self-motivation, to get out there and literally drive yourself to where it is you hope and want to be, or want to become, or want to get. I was very fortunate there, too, because when I made up my mind I wanted to be a ball player, the mind was made up, man. You couldn't change it, see? And I didn't have to have my dad or my mother or my high school coach or my college coach or anybody saying, wake up, Dan, you got to go out and play another day of ball. Because I loved to play ball. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I loved, see? I could motivate myself. I didn't need these other people to motivate me. Man, it was 6 o'clock, I'm up, I'm out, I'm running. Man, I'm thinking about getting a hit here in this game. I'm getting my body in shape. I'm taking care of myself. I'm going to win this game. And I had that drive. And you've got to have it too. You've got to have drive, see? A good example of drive is a lot of people say, I hear a lot of young people say, well, I ask them, and my brothers are an example. I used to make fun of my brothers because they never knew what they wanted to do. You know, I say, well, what are you going to do, Tommy? You're 16, 17 years old. Where are you going? See, I knew where I was going. What do you hope to become? I don't know. Then you're almost, you know. He turned 20. Well, Tommy, you're 20 years old now. Where are you going? I don't know. You know? Well, he's 25. Well, what are you going to be? Well, I don't know. He's going to be 50. I know what I want to be. I want to be a hockey player, see? He's 50 years old. But it's too late, man. You should have thought about that when you were younger, see? But anyway, I used to make fun of him, and I shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. Well, I love my brothers. I really do. I love them a great deal. Especially now. Drive. Okay, so. You've got to have drive, right? Okay, drive means don't wait for something to come to you, people. Go out there and get it. When you see something that you want, don't wait because my dad would tell me over and over, Dan, you want to play pro ball? Well, you can sit in front of that TV till you're blue in the face, and nobody's going to come knock on this door and say, okay, Dan Thomas, we want to put you in the major leagues. My dad was right. Nobody's going to come knocking on that door for me. I have got to make them want to come knock on that door. So I applied drive. I had drive, and you have drive. Either you have it yourself, or you can motivate yourself, or there are other people around you that can motivate you. Whatever it takes, you've got to have drive. It's law number four. Law number five is resourcefulness. Resourcefulness simply means solve the problem. Being able to get around or over or go through or under or to the side of the obstacles that you're going to have. Whenever you people make up your minds what you want to become, I'm here to tell you, young people, you're going to have problems. You think, you want to be a dentist? Well, great, here's the drill. You think it's going to be that easy? You know, here's a drill and here, plug it in and just drill on this to... It's not going to be that easy. If you have something you want to become, if it's of any value to you at all, and that's another thing I should say here, when you make your goal, don't make your goal easy. Make your goal high so you can, because anything that's easy to attain or easy to come by is not worth much, see? Being a Major League professional baseball player was worth a great deal to me. And man, I had problems. All kinds of problems. And you're going to have problems. All kinds of problems. From this to that, who knows? You're going to have them. And you've got to have resourcefulness, law number five, to be able to solve those problems. See? If you don't have resourcefulness, then you're going to stop dead in your tracks here. Well, I got a problem here. I go to a weird church. Well, that's another thing. I'll get to that later. Well, you know, when I was in college, I got a scholarship to college, and I almost didn't make it to my goal, a professional baseball player. I almost stopped, and I was almost in bad trouble. But see, what happened was, when I went to college, I was there to play ball, see? I wasn't there to go over here and learn about English and learn about math. Learn about all this other history. I was there to play baseball, see? And I looked out here and I saw all these jocks. They had the swimmers there and they had the track players there. And all these guys were guaranteed a C, you know? They were guaranteed a C. All I had to do was sign a letter to go to that college to play ball. And the coach, whatever sport they were in, would go to their instructors. Well, I got my boy Joe here. He's one of my star athletes. And we got a big meet coming up here tomorrow. And I need him, and I want him to have a C. Well, I said, man, that's what I want, see? Well, I didn't have that. My coach was weirdo, man. You got to get your own grades, and if you flunk out, tough. That's what he told me. Yeah, but that ain't right, man. Everybody else is getting a C. Guarantee me a C, because I hated to study, and I didn't like to go to class. I hated it. I didn't want to go hear this communist tell me he's a commie. You know, what difference do I have? It doesn't make any difference to me. You know, communist, you know, long-haired beard, long hair down the ear, came up with his marijuana cigarette telling me about the facts of life or something, you know. What, you know, where's this guy coming from, you know? I know, what am I doing here? I don't have to listen to this guy. I'm going to be a ball player. What facts of life got to do with playing ball? Man, I get thirsty talk. Well, anyway, I had great trouble. I was 20 hours short. Now, that's hard to believe. If a lot of you people have older brothers or sisters or parents that went to college, you'll find out that if you take 15 hours in a quarter, you're carrying a load, right? Well, geniuses can only take 18, and you had dean's approval to do that. Well, I was short 20, see? I was really in trouble. Man, I didn't know what to do. I went to that college, and I partied around, and I forgot about my grades, and I worked on my athletic skills, and I was in bad trouble. Next thing I knew, I looked up, uh-oh. And this was my sophomore year. I was going to turn 21. I was going to be eligible to turn pro. There were large sums of money at stake. My whole career, my whole life's work was at stake. And I got this problem. This 20-hour problem was a mountain, man. Well, I got to thinking, well, what am I going to do about it? You know, am I going to stop dead still here? I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You're in trouble. You need to pass these 20 hours. Well, I'll know what I'll do. I'll go see my counselor. At my college, they have these women and men that are counselors. And they get paid large sums of money to help dumb students like me, see? You know, not dumb, but not smart, see? So I'm going to go see my counselor. And she's going to help me, I figure. That's what she's there for. That's why she's a counselor and I'm a student. That's why she gets paid $35,000, $40,000. I don't know if she made that much. But she is supposed to help me. So I go into her office. Her name was Mrs. Lingle, right? You can picture Mrs. Lingle. Old lady, crabby old lady, boy. So I go in here, and I tell her my problem. Mrs. Lingle, I'm short 20 hours. Yeah, you're one of them students that don't care about this university. All you got is ball on your mind and women and this on, you know. And well, you know, everything that lady said was true. See? I didn't care about the university. All I cared about was getting my goal. I'm going somewhere, lady, and you have it in your power to write down on that piece of paper 20 hours here, and I'll go past those 20 hours, and when June gets here, I'll get what I want, and I'll come in and I'll thank you for it, and we'll get along fine. Just write down there 20 hours on that paper there. I'm short 20 hours. I don't need you climbing all over my back. My dad climbed all over my back. I heard it all when I was home. My dad almost killed me. Boy, I'm going to kill you. You know? Well, there were rules. See, I forgot about the rules. You have to follow the rules, see? Well, at that time, see, I didn't know any better because I was bound and determined. And nobody was going to stop me. Not Mrs. Lingle. Nobody. So she told me she wouldn't help me. She said, well, Dan, tough. You got yourself 20 hours short. You just flunked school. You will not sign this year. I said, yeah, but Mrs. Lingle, there's a lot of money at stake here. Well, that's tough. You will not sign. You will come back to school next year, and you will work harder on your grades so that you can sign. Well, no. I'm not going to do it. So I said, well, what can you do for me? Well, I can write down 14 hours for you. And I says, well, 14, that's still going to put me 6 short. And she says, yeah, I know. And I, well, that's too bad. See? Well, okay, Mrs. Lingle, just write down the 14. And you know, I'll just have to work on passing the 14. But my wheels were turning, see. So she wrote down the 14 hours for me. And I went out. And I got outside of the door there, and I was really sad and upset. And I saw all the other students fixing to go in and see us. See, there were a lot of students that had grade trouble at the school I went to. And I got to thinking, well, what am I going to do here? So I had the manual there with all the courses in it, from freshman course to senior course. It had all the hours in it. And I got to thinking, and I said, well, I'll just add on 6 more hours here. I'll forge her name and I'll add on 6 more hours. I'll solve my problem. Well, I got to thinking, well, you know, Dan, you have really a hard time passing 12 hours, much less 20, you know. Well, and you have to have a dean's approval to get 18. You better add on 10 more hours just in case you fail 4, see? And that way, you'll have 20, see? Because I didn't think I'd pass all 20 if I just took 20. So I made a little margin of error there, see. I figured out, well, if I take 24, if I add on 10 more hours. Now, we're talking about one quarter. Geniuses only take 18. If I add on 10 more hours and I flunk 4, I'll have my 20. I'll be eligible. I'll get what I want. Well, that's what I did. I added on 10 more hours. I signed Mrs. Lingle's name to it, and I signed also a dean's name to it. So, but see, I didn't know any better then because I was dumb, see. And I don't advocate this to this day. Now I know better. I know that was wrong, a wrong thing to do, see? That wasn't right. But then I didn't know any better because I had to get what I wanted by any means possible. Now I know you can get the same things from other ways, better ways than cheating and lying and stealing. Well, I had to learn the hard way. Well, anyway, I went ahead and I passed all 24 hours. I went over and I applied resourcefulness. I walked over to registration, dropped in these cards, and the people that worked in registration were looking up at me, and they were going, man, this guy's taking 24 hours. You know, look at the guy with the big glasses on. Man, he must be some kind of genius. Look, he even got Dean Wright's approval on here, man. You know, they really thought it was really great. Well, once it goes to the computers, there's nothing you can do. See, I went to a college with 30,000 students. So once those computers went click, 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 it was locked in. My coach had given up on me. My career seemed like it was going downhill. Everybody had given up on me. I was going to classes from 6:30 in the morning until 9:30 at night. I didn't have time to practice more my baseball skills. I couldn't go to baseball practice, and it looked like it was all over. Well, a quarter later, I passed all 24 hours. I think I took 6 final exams on one day. So, when you make up your mind you want something and you apply resourcefulness, you can do it. Well, I passed those 24 hours. And, man, I went back to my room and got all these books I had been carrying around. I just lived, and those books just were crammed into me, man. I was reading and studying and going to the library every day to get those grades, to get what I wanted. But after I did it, boy, I just got those books. Man, I did it. I did it. They didn't think I could do it. I did it. I showed them I could do it. You know, in a big article in the college paper, Dan Thomas, who was supposedly going to be ineligible, passed 24 hours. Man, you know, I thought they were going to put me on the dean's list or something, see? You know, I never did run into Dean Wright, but resourcefulness is law number 5 to success. Law number 6 is perseverance. Perseverance. Stick to it. Never, never, never say die. Never give up, people. Because when you give up, then what good are you? You're through. You gave up. You know? Never give up. Always fight. You're going to have these things. Right goal, education, good health, drive, resourcefulness. Now you get down to perseverance. We're talking about never quitting. I'd like to use another example in my life here of how I applied perseverance to become a professional baseball player. When I was 17, 18 years old, I used to go to these tryout camps. See, they hold these things every year. They still do today. And these tryout camps are for people that the pros are trying to get interested in. See, so usually they put a number on your back, and you get your spikes and your glove on, you go out, and you try to do something really good to impress these scouts. See, because they're watching you and they're grading you. And if you do really good, they might even offer you a pro contract. And boy, that's what I want, see. Well, anyway, there was one scout named Bobby Kring. I used to go to all kinds of these things. And this guy was with the Pittsburgh Pirates, Bobby Kring, and he had signed a lot of important baseball players. And I really respected Mr. Kring, and I needed him. I knew he could help me in my career. So I went to these tryouts, and I remember one time in particular, I usually had very good days because I had talent, like many of you have talent. I had skills in baseball. I was 17, I think, or 18. I might have been 18. And I went to Mr. Kring after one day, and I said, well, how'd I look? You know, I just hit a home run in a game, and I hit a double, and I knocked in some runs, and I figured, man, I'm doing really good. I had my sweatbands on. I had the smut under my eye. And, man, I'm really a hot dog here, see? I didn't care if I was a hot dog. I'm doing good, man. I'm helping, showing him I got skills. And I went to him. And I'll never forget what he told me. He told me, Mr. Kring looked at me and says, well, Dan, you think you're pretty good, don't you? And I said, well, I know I'm good, see? Man, I've developed, I've worked, I've built myself up mentally and physically. I know I'm good. He says, you don't have it. You just don't have it in you. It's time to quit. It's time to go to another field. Well, I could have believed Mr. Kring, in which case I would have went back to that copper plant in Soja, Illinois. Not that I have anything against copper plants, but that I would still be working there for probably maybe $3.40 an hour. Then I was making $3.20 an hour, which is pretty good money. But I didn't want to work in that copper plant. And I looked at Mr. Kring, and even though he was telling me I didn't have it, in my own mind, as soon as he was talking to me, I was saying, Mr. Kring, the trouble with you is you don't know a ball player when you see one. See? I'm out here showing you all this talent, and you're telling me I ain't got it? You ought to know after signing all these other important people that I got talent. I didn't believe him. See? I applied perseverance. I don't believe you, Mr. Kring. I'm gonna prove you wrong. Well, 2 years later, Mr. Kring comes back to see me. And you know what he tells me? And to this day, it's one of the most important things which I really cherish and value. He comes up to me with a big smile on his face, and he goes, you know, Dan, I was wrong about you. I said you would never make it, and you did make it. See? And I'd just like to shake your hand. And boy, I really felt good shaking his hand, because I felt like I had accomplished and made my point and strove and had followed the laws of success, see? And I did it. Law number 6 is perseverance. Law number 7 is the most important law of success that you can follow. Without law number 7, there is no success. There is no such thing as success, true success. Now, a lot of you know your friends out here in the world, and I have friends in the world, do I? And not too many anymore, but see, they all look successful to you. They all look like, well, boy, this guy is really doing good. Boy, that guy is really doing this and that and the other. Look at your movie stars. Look at your high-paid athletes. Look at all of the people that you think in your own minds are successful people. Well, these people are not successful. These people got hang-ups, man. These people are hurting. Sure, they got all the money in the world to cover up some of that hurt, see? And I was just as bad because here I'm striving. I had only applied law 1 through 6 toward baseball. I figured, well, at that time I didn't need law number 7 because it wouldn't have got me what I wanted, see? I didn't believe. I knew there was a God, but I didn't believe that this was the most important, see? I read it in this book. Mr. Armstrong tells me that law number 7 is most important. Ah, he don't know what he's talking about. Well, Mr. Armstrong knows what he's talking about. And I had to learn a lesson that I would not wish on any of you. And it hurts. And it continues to hurt. And it will hurt. Law number 7, and the most important law of success, is divine guidance and direction from God. See? I mean, I believed in God, but I didn't think he meant anything to me. You know, well, God, what good can I do? What good are you to me? I mean, I'm over here trying to become a ball player and become a success, quote unquote, which I thought was success. And now you're telling me, you know, what do you mean? Well, anyway, I applied law 1 through 6 and I made it to the major league. Sure, I got what I wanted. I was supposed, now you think, well, man, he's really happy. He went from little league all the way up. He conquered obstacle after obstacle. He finally made it to where he wanted. Boy, you think he's got money coming in now. He's got a little bit of a reputation about himself. He's considered this and that and the other. He looks like he's on his way to becoming a real millionaire. Well, I fell flat on my face. I had a nervous breakdown. and I could not believe what was happening. Just like many of you, when it happens to you, are not going to believe. Because, man, all of this was supposed to happen to everybody else, man. This doesn't happen to me. I mean, I was over and beyond. I had all the wrong reasons. I had my pride. I had my vanity. I was out to get for me. Well, I got for me. I got me in a mental hospital. That's what I got. Asking myself, what in the world went wrong? I have everything I could want, and I'm not happy. What's wrong? I should be happy by all means of the word. Everybody around me was happy for me. My dad was, boy, my mother was happy. My brothers were happy for me. My wife was happy for me. Well, he's got what he wants now. He should be happy. I was miserable. I was terrible. I didn't feel good at all. And why? Because I had overlooked the most important law of success there is. I did not need God. Well, I need God. How do I need Him? I know how I need Him now. Because without God, there is no success. See? So now, after 4 months of being in that hospital and gaining 25 pounds, smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day, which was another false god, which baseball was a false god, which I didn't know at the time. I was so stupid and couldn't see. I went to spring training praying to God. Oh God, if you get me out of this, I'll never go astray, which is what all of us say when we get in trouble. But I went to spring training, see. I sat down in the hospital one day, and I figured out, and I was one of the few lucky ones that was given a second chance. Many of you here may not be so lucky. I sat down and what went wrong? All right, let me retract. I applied to Wright Gold Baseball. I had the education toward my goal. I got that. Good health. I'm not healthy now, but I had good health. Drive. I had plenty of drive. I didn't need any more of that. I had resourcefulness. I had plenty of that. I exercised that. I had plenty of perseverance. Man, I got plenty of all six of those. What went wrong? Well, I started reading this thing again, see? Success. See, it's got big letters on it. Success. And I went back. See, I had read it before when I was 16. I was in the church at one time, just like you're sitting here. And I had a problem with ball. The coach said, you can't play on Friday night, you can't play. So I said, well, I got to play, you know. Well, it put me in a very undesirable place, and I never want to go back to that place, and I don't wish that on any of you. But I started reading this thing there, and I found out what I did wrong. I didn't obey God, number one. I didn't follow God. I didn't really put God where He belongs, number one, not number three. Number four, behind baseball, wife, new car, now comes God. No, it won't work. It will not work. God is number one. He has to be number one. In your minds, you have got to put God number one in anything and everything that you do to achieve, with these other six laws, to achieve true success. And the reason is because God, with God, there are absolutely, There is absolutely nothing impossible for God. He can do anything. He can do miracles. And many of you have had miracles in your lives, and your parents have had miracles. And they know what God can do. And I know now some of the very little, but I'm learning, and I continue to learn, and I want to learn more. And I'm continually striving, and you should be striving with your overall goal in mind, applying the other minor goals while you're here on earth. Well, I went to spring training after 4 months praying to God, get me out of baseball, God. I don't want to go back. I'm hurt. I couldn't face my teammates. All of my pride and dignity was collapsed. I was 25 pounds overweight. I was in no condition to play the game of baseball, mentally or physically. And I prayed to God. I actually got down on my knees, where I'm continuing to be every day now. And I asked God to get me out of it. Don't make me go to spring training. They're going to laugh at me. It's going to be humiliating to go back and face the guys that I have lived with and now to see them accept it, to let them see me the way I am, the way I truly am. I'm nothing. I'm worth nothing. But anyway, I got a contract, and I went to spring training only on faith on God is all I had. Well, if it must be this way, then I'll go. I'll do the best I can. I don't want to go, but I'm relying on you, God, to help me. Well, I went back to spring training, and I told the Milwaukee Brewers, hey, you know what, Milwaukee? You're wrong. The whole world is wrong. There is no happiness in becoming a Major League Baseball player. There is no success, true success. Look what happened to me, Milwaukee. Well, what are you going to do, Dan? I'm going to obey God for the first time in my life. I'm going to submit. I'm going to rely on God. I'm going to put God number one. And baseball, Mr. Ballmer and Mr. Bud Selig, Milwaukee, is now going to be number three in my life, and it's not going to be my false God and the one I worship and the thing that motivates me. God now will be the one I serve, and all of these things will be added to me. I'm not going to rely on you and your contracts and your decisions you make. I'll rely on the Creator of the entire world and the universe. I'll rely on God. With God on my side, I can't lose. Nothing's impossible with God. So, I told him, as of now, I will no longer play baseball for you on Friday night. Man, this guy's really flipped. No, I was flipped, see? I was down as low as a human could go. Now, thank God, I got some help. I was disobeying. Now I'm going to obey. And many of you, too, are thinking, I know you are, you're thinking about leaving the church. A lot of you are thinking about that because you're young people and you see your friends out there and you're going, man, what's the church do for me? And man, what's this? You know, if anything else, look what happened to me. And if you have that in your mind, then I suggest that you get it out of your mind. Because if you leave, you're going to do the same thing I did. And you may not be so lucky. You may leave and leave the church, disobey God. Knowing what you know now, you're going to get hurt. You are going to fall on your face. It's only a question of time when you leave. And when you come back, it's going to hurt to look these people in the eye that you once knew so well and say, well, man, I wish I'd have never left. Today, I wish I'd have never left. And I'll never leave. Okay, let me close with this statement. I hope each and every one of you, and I feel confident that following these seven laws of success, believe me, there is absolutely no limit. Milwaukee tells me now, let's play ball. Hey, man, 6 days a week, let's play. I cut out all my gods. I'm not smoking anymore. I've cleaned up my act. I'm following God. I'm submitting now. I go out there now. Hey, throw it, man. I'll hit it. Why? Because I got God on my side, see? I know I can achieve now. I can be a true... I can, for once in my life, have true success. Money can't buy it. All the wealth in the world can't buy it. Only God gives it to you. See, I got that now, see? So when they tell me, let's play ball, I'm ready to play. Let me conclude by saying, if we follow these seven laws of success that I've just given to you, if we follow them, not only are we going to make it into God's kingdom, but we will also enjoy true and lasting success while we live and breathe and walk on this earth. Thank you. That's okay. No, that's all right. Listen. Listen. Thank you. Sit down. I think at this time, if any of you have any questions that you'd like to ask me, don't... I know a lot about sports, see? So if you have any questions that you'd like to ask me concerning baseball or what it's like or any of the experiences I had, I would be happy to answer any of the questions at this time if any of you have any. If not, then... Okay.
How did you arrange getting back on the team and everything, and how are you doing now? Or how do you think you're going to be doing this next season?
Well, that's okay. I didn't really arrange getting back on the team. See, Milwaukee, when I told them that I was going to follow the Sabbath and put God number one in my life, Milwaukee got very unhappy, you know, because, you know, they had, to be quite honest, they had expected a lot of things from me, see? But the thing they didn't know was, when I was in Milwaukee following following God, you know, for the first time in my life, I was hitting the ball in the major league, see? I was producing more than I had produced before. And I tried to explain to them, hey, listen, I can hit and I can produce for you only because I'm following God. I'm putting God number one. If I go back to my old way and play 7 days a week, I'll tell you, Mr. Seeley, I'll fall flat on my face. I will not hit well. I knew I wouldn't because I didn't have any confidence left. All my confidence and trust now is in my Maker, is in God. So... for now, coming back, they've offered me a contract, which to me tells me that, well, they're going to accept it. As much as they hate it, they don't have any choice because I'm never going to change. I've found what I want now, and I'm going to hang on for dear life. Does that answer your question? So I'm going to play ball again, following God. Here's one here. Pardon me?
How did you get out of that forgery note?
Oh, well, what happened was, the school I went to had 30,000 students, and I was considered a number. I didn't have a name. My number was 355-464076. So when I went and took the thing in there, they looked at the dean's thing, and what they should have done, see, once those grade computer slips go into the computers, they can't erase them. Because they have to go back and erase 30,000 computer slips to get mine. So I knew if I could get by the registration people, it'd be okay. Well, when they looked and saw 24 hours, they were just flabbergasted. See, this guy is, and he's even got a dean's list. Have they called the dean? No, who is, what's his number? What's his name? And I would have been in bad trouble. But I was just gambling. I got away lucky. I got a lucky break. I was gambling they wouldn't call the dean, and they didn't. And that's how I got away with it.
Do you think that you really could have made it to the point of being a professional baseball player if you hadn't left the church?
Well, I did make it. I thought, see.
Stayed in the church. Do you think that you could have made it?
Knowing what I know now?
Yeah.
Absolutely no doubt. No doubt whatsoever. I would have walked up to that coach in high school and said, hey, I'm one of the best players you got. God has gifted me. Not only will your team play well, but I'll produce for you, man, because I'm following these laws. There's no doubt in my mind now. If I put God first, and if I don't play on the Sabbath anymore, I'm going to be all right. Anybody else? We have one here. Oh, okay. Let's see, the man with the glasses there. Hollywood there. Stand up, Hollywood. All right.
How did you respond to the article in People Magazine? Because I found it at work by accident. I believe that was you.
Well, they asked to do the interview with me. And a lot of my teammates on my team said, man, you ought to hit them for a couple of grand right here. Because I usually pay. I try to be, it's the first time in my life that I usually hate reporters, or I always had hated them before. I don't hate them now. I don't hate anyone now.
Did you get much response to the article? Because none of us in Columbia, I'm from South Carolina, nobody in the area knew about it. I don't think even the minister knew about it. And I told my foster parents, and, you know, it kind of spread around the church. And they were really interested.
Yeah, I got some letters concerning it, but other than that, that's all I got, and I tried to answer them. And I didn't get paid. I did it free. Anybody? Oh, we have one over here.
What goals would you like to achieve as a Major League Baseball player?
Thank you for asking that. I've been dying to tell you. Well, this is going to sound hard to believe. I mean, a lot of you out there are just not going to believe it. I got a drink of that. My goal now, while I'm, you know, is in baseball, now that I'm following God first, I'm going to be the first player in the history of the American League. Well, and I don't know, in the history of the American League. See, I play for the Milwaukee Brewers, and that will win the Triple Crown in the American League. Following God. See? That's my goal, see? I'm going to do it, see? They say it can't be done. Bull, it can be done. Thank you. Anybody else?
Yeah, I'd like to know how your teammates felt when you first told them that you were going to keep the Sabbath and all.
Yeah, that's a good question. What's your name?
Steve Ward.
Steve Ward? Thank you for asking that. You know, my teammates were stunned, you know, because they saw, they were absolutely stunned. They could not believe it. I even had guys come up to me. Now, this is, it's embarrassing to admit when you play a professional sport that you've ever talked to a psychiatrist. And I'll tell you, a lot of those guys have. A lot of guys you'd be surprised to know. But they were stunned that, man, Dan, have you flipped? And I tried to tell him, I'm not flipped now because I'm obeying, but I was flipped. I was in bad trouble, man. But I was getting a lot of publicity when I was on the team in Milwaukee, especially. Every town we went to, they called me the sundown kid. Well, here's this guy, the sundown kid that refuses to play on the Sabbath, you know. And they were just, you know, going to town on me, see. And every town we went to, the reporters were just cramming around the bus trying to get at me. And we got guys over here like Sal Bando making $1 million in 5 years. And Sixto Lescano and Robin Yount, one of the youngest players to come out of high school to play professional baseball. And a lot of their ego, a lot of their prides were hurt. They didn't like me getting all that publicity. I was becoming too important, see. But I tell you what they did like. They liked me up there swinging. When they weren't hitting, they liked to see me up there swinging that bat for them, because when I was getting the hit, they were writing, Sundown Kid gets another hit. And they weren't writing, what's happened to the million-dollar talent that so-and-so was supposed to have, see? They weren't coming down on them, see? So they, plus I was telling Mike, they liked me out there after the game to sign those autographs, see, so that all the important players could get out of the back door. I'd be the scapegoat. I'd go out there, and all these kids would come for autographs, and I'd sign them, see, and I'd be looking over my shoulder, well, there goes Sal, and there goes Yant, and There goes Sixto and, you know, who, what have you. So all those guys were making their getaway, see. They like me for that, too. Okay. You know, I passed, the lowest grade I got was a D, and I almost didn't make that, see. That was really close, because it was winter quarter, the shortest quarter of the year. And I had to have those at least 20 hours. And I had a five-hour course called, it was a senior course. It was a government course. And I had written a paper, and my instructor for my term paper at the end there, after I passed my final exam, but we had to write a term paper that was, I can't remember, so many pages long. And I had written this paper, and my instructor claimed that I, what do they use the word, what do they say when you copy something? Plagiarized. And it's a very serious offense. And I wasn't aware of the seriousness. It was a five-hour course. See, that would have made me, if I'd have flunked that. See, you can be expelled from school for that. And, boy, I got down on my knees thinking, boy, you know, I didn't know I was plagiarizing because I had read a book and summarized in my mind what I had read and it written it, you know. I didn't know, I didn't take it word for word out, but it was very close. It could have been. See, he let me off. He gave me a break. Okay. Okay, we have, there's my good friend Steve.
I wanted to know, whenever you asked off for Friday nights and Saturdays, did most of the other players went off on certain days too?
Well, not really. The other players were too into making money, the way I used to be. They were so wrapped up in what's in it for me that they didn't. The only thing is, we had one guy named Timmy Johnson that, Timmy was a funny guy, and he sits on the bench a lot, you know. He's one of these guys that gets paid a lot of money to sit on the bench, you know. I mean, he makes good money. I'm not going to tell you how much. I found out. But anyway, Timmy used to have a lot of fun with me because Friday, see, I'd go in early to the ballpark, and I'd get my running in, and get in some early hitting with Frank Howard to come out and pitch to me, and I'd hit up until about 3:34. See, I could have stayed a little bit later because the sun wasn't going to set until 6. But, you know, I completely wore myself out that day. And I got to the point, you know, whenever I felt tired, we had this big thing over there, in the stadium there. And when the sun would start setting, the shadow would start coming out across the infield, right? Well, usually when that shadow started coming out, I'd be out taking ground balls or hitting or something or running. Timmy would look over and say, "Hey, kid, get out of the shadow, man. The sun's going to go down on you." See? So, that, you know, my teammates pretty much accepted, you know, Dan's been through, they knew what I had been through. They had seen me, and they had heard about the things that I had did, and they knew where I had been, and they were kind of watching me, and, man, he really is serious about this. He, you know, he could care less about this team, or, I mean, you know, I cared about the team, but he is not putting this team above anything. So, does that answer your question? Okay. Let me, this man here, what's your question? Well, that too was, I got a problem there because I think last year, the season would still be going on during the feast. And I had told Milwaukee in spring training of my intention to obey God. And see, I started relearning a lot of the things about God's holy days and when they were and why they were and why we celebrate them and stuff like this. And I started learning while I was during the season. See, I was having to have my mind readjusted, reprogrammed, I guess, into God. But I told them, I said, well, not only is it they wanted to know, so well, what all is involved here in this religion? And I said, well, I'll tell you what I know as of now. See, they also have other. I think three times a year, they meet and they hold festivals. And one of those festivals is the Feast of Tabernacles. I will go to the Feast of Tabernacles. And I, you know, well, Dan, I'm going to fire you. Fire, see? But he didn't fire me. And the reason he didn't fire me because if he fired me, there might be another team over here. Maybe even the New York Yankees. See? because the Yankees have got so many good hitters. They got so much talent. They won't be relying on me so much. See, when I was in Milwaukee, they were relying on me to win that game for them. I was the lowest paid player on the team. I was a weirdo kid that believed in God that they relied on to win the game for them. And Milwaukee, I don't know if you know the history of their team, but they haven't done well in a long time. So when I go up to plate, man, all them guys, come on, Dan. Come on, baby. We're rooting for you. You dang right there rooting for me. They're making all that money. I'm not making no money. See? I'm taking the pressure off them, see? And I just didn't... The weight of having to carry the team got heavy. So if they fire me, there's always that possibility, nothing's impossible with God, that maybe even another team will pick me up with my belief. Well, Danny's got this old weird religion here, but you know, that guy, 6 days a week, he swings a bat. He just goes out there and just goes right at it, man. And another thing, you know, the sportscasters of the games, we had a sportscaster named Merle Harmon, didn't agree with what I was doing and what I believed. He didn't know I didn't have any choice. I had to believe God, see? I was forced to, see? For my sanity reasons, for my mental health condition, I was forced to obey God, see? And a lot of you that don't obey God are going to be forced. And the world, let's face it, sooner or later, the whole world is going to be forced to obey God. Just bend them at the knee. If God has to break their knees, they're going to bow to Him. Well, these sportscasters were making a big point about that, you know, like, especially on Sunday games. And I had one guy, Merle Harmon in particular, that said, you know, there's got to be something to that. I mean, you go home Friday night and you eat your best meal of the week, Sabbath evening. You get a good, the best meal, maybe even a little wine. It's the best meal of the whole week, I know that. You rest up the extra day. You can sleep in late, you know. And you come back Sunday, you got to be raring to go. You got to have energies flowing, man. Just, you know, boom, boom, see. You know, I found that the Sabbath thing, and it worked too, you know. Some of my best games in the major leagues were on Sundays of all days. I was supposed to be late. I'd go to batting practice. In one game in Detroit, I wasn't ready. I came in a locker room and all the guys, Allah be praised, the man of prophecy, see. These guys come in here, they're making fun of me, see. And especially Sal and those guys. See, I used to really get to Sal because he hates to be called Sally. See? And when Sal started getting on my case, I'd say, well, nice to see you today, Sally. And boy, I'd really get to him, see. So Sundays, one game in Detroit, I had a real good day, and I didn't think I was ready. I went out and took batting practice, and, oh, God, Father, I just don't feel good today, you know. And I hit one. Well, what happened? I only had four warm-up swings. Usually I can hit, you know, a long time until I'm ready, see, and then I go into the game. But this day was running a little late, and by the time I got into the cage, I hit one, and I hit another one, and then the buzzer went off, which means the game's going to start in a few minutes. We got to get off and take infield. So, throw me two more real quick, and I threw two more, and I went over, and I was sitting in the dugout thinking, boy, I'm not ready. I know I'm not ready. We got this game, and I'm not ready. I'm in a lineup. I just have to rely on God. I'm forced to have to rely on Him. And I'm thinking, oh, God, help me get through this. And I went out there that day, and I had one of my best days. I hit one in the upper deck in Detroit there. And that was and it wasn't me. It wasn't all me. I know that. I had a lot of help. How much time do we have, Mike? Another five? How about one over here?
Was your wife, when you got married, was she in the church? And how did the rest of your family take it when you went and started changing and started keeping the Sabbath?
No, my wife was not in the church. When we were dating, see, I knew enough about the church that I didn't celebrate Christmas and Easter when I was 16, 17. I think I was 16 when I left the church. 16. And, I wish I'd never done it. But anyway, I met my wife, and I liked her. And she celebrated Christmas. I still like you too, baby. She was a Baptist when I met her, and she couldn't understand why I wouldn't participate in Christmas and Easter, because I figured, well, I'm guilty of breaking God's Sabbath, but I'm not going to let Him pin the old keeping Christmas on me, so I'll follow him that way. Okay, anyway. You mean the management or the players in Milwaukee? A lot of the players, like I said, they didn't agree with my belief, but they were glad to have me on that ball club because I could hit. And especially some of the pitchers. I remember pitchers like Jim Slayton came up to me one time and goes, "Boy, I sure hope they schedule me to pitch on a Sunday." See? Because that's, you know, that was usually my hottest day. You know, I was strong Sundays, you know. I was strong all 6 days except the Sabbath. See, I wouldn't play on the Sabbath. But he was hoping that he would never have to pitch on the Sabbath because he wanted my stick in the lineup. See, he knew that, you know, one swing of the bat, I could knock one 480 feet, you know, in the outfield there. So he was glad to have, you know. But when I got sent down, they pretty much, I was, you know, they came on, "Man, they're going to send you down." And I said, "Well," he said, "don't that bother you?" And, you know, and I said, "Well, yeah, but, you know, I don't care, man. I know what's important to me. I know peace of mind is more important than this ball club." You know, following God has given me peace of mind, and I'm not going to jeopardize that anymore. Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to know if you have any suggestions about what we can do about our coaches at school on different sports.
Well, that's a very good question. Thank you. You know what I suggest is tell them. You know, over and over and over, you know, when 10 years ago when I was in the church, everybody was walking around kind of, "I'm in the Worldwide Church of God, goodbye." You know. Hey, God says that we are the light of the world. I mean, we are to be looked at. They're supposed to follow our example. And if we're going around ashamed of being in God's church, we don't deserve to be here in the first place, see, if you're ashamed. So you just walk up there and say, "Listen, hey, you know who I am?" But you tell them, it's like this, 6 days can I help you, but the Sabbath is the seventh day of rest. It's holy time to me now, and, well, you don't even have to tell them that, but, well, you tell them it's holy time to you, see? But in your mind, you can say it's holy time to you in the future, see? Just tell them. Come right out. Don't be ashamed of your convictions. Don't be ashamed of God. Never be ashamed. Be proud. Be happy. Rejoice. Be glad. Because without Him, people, without God, we're done. We're all through. I mean, you've got to realize, we don't have a prayer without God. Okay. Another one? Well, you've already asked one. There's one of them. Well, they didn't until I got sent down. When I was in the major leagues, I was still making a minimum wage, which is $19,000 a year for 6 months' work. Now you know why I want to play ball. See, there used to be a lot of restrictions, see? See, I know the seven laws of success. See, now you do too. Now you know you're not limited. You're the light of the world. You're not supposed to walk out here in rags. Look at old, you know, he's a Christian, you know. That's the way I used to think. That's why I eventually left. You know, emphasis today is put on the young people of the church. They didn't have YOU when I was 16. They didn't care I was there. Well, they cared, but I didn't know it. You know? Now you people have gotten opportunities. Look, you're getting to congregate here. You're getting to meet people of your own age group. I got a sister right now that would be die. She'd almost give anything to be here where you are today. I mean, she would hitchhike here if you guys would still be here when she got here. She would. It's important to her. She's been in a church and she's had all these old traditions. The church has changed. We're talking about development, betterment. We are to be perfect. Strive for perfection. That's what we're to do. So that means in everything you do, strive for perfection. In everything. Knowing that you're never going to achieve total perfection as you are,
But you're to still strive. That's what we're told to do. Strive for it. Go for perfect. When I'm out there hitting, I'm trying to hit that ball as hard and as far as I can. Whenever you're doing things you do, you're supposed to be doing it with 100%. If you're not giving it 100%, you're cheating yourself. Not only are you cheating yourself, you're cheating God, which is the most important thing. Because God's given you your talents and your abilities. Every one of you out there has unique talents and abilities that can be applied. And if you don't use those, you're really sinning against God. Because He gave them to you. And He tells you not to neglect the gift that's in you. Okay, I think that'll do it for now. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.